Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we explore on this podcast. And what we're looking at right now is a summer series on what it means for educators to own our professional learning. And so we've gotten into different topics, whether it's been book clubs, mastermind groups. We're going to be getting into, you know, what self-paced courses look like, webinars, all kinds of different things. And today I want to talk about one area in particular, and it's this idea of reading books and making the most out of our reading habits. So today we're going to talk about what it means to read 50 books in a year, even when you are super duper busy. I did just say super duper. So, according to a Pew Research poll, over a quarter of the U.S. adult population said they hadn't read a book within the last year. And that's true whether it was an audiobook, ebook, physical book format, they just haven't read at all. For those with a college degree, the percentage is significantly lower. It's only 8%. But the reality is, a lot of people don't read, or they don't read as much as they would like to. While the average person reads 12 books a year, that's the mean, the median was actually 4. In other words, there is a small segment of the population that reads many, many books. And I think it's important because reading is one of the best ways that you can own your professional learning. Previously on another podcast episode, I mentioned how book clubs allow us to wrestle with ideas in a community, but reading multiple books from many different perspectives can also help us wrestle with those ideas in solitude. And I think that's a really important place to carve out this sort of alone mental space where you are making sense out of those ideas. Now, they can help us gain new perspectives and ideas, which can spur innovation and creativity. Books can help us gain empathy toward other groups, and reading across genres and topics can allow us to make connections between seemingly unrelated ideas. Avid readers are the types of people who read, I would say, 1 to 2 books a week. And it's easy to imagine that these super readers are being, you know, speed readers. But the reality is, actually, you can read about 50 books a year, roughly a book a week, even if you aren't particularly fast. It doesn't require a massive time commitment either. By making small tweaks in your daily life, you can carve out the time to read 50 books in a year. And we're going to dive into how we actually make this happen with several different little tiny small tweaks. So small tweak number one, find ways to make time for reading. All right, I'm going to do some nerdy math for just a moment. Most people read somewhere between 200 to 250 words per minute. Now, I am an avid reader, but I'm on that 200 end. I'm not necessarily the fastest reader. Now, let's go on the safe side and say 200 words per minute. Now, most books are around 50,000 words, most nonfiction books. A lot of novels are a little bit longer, but let's say 50,000 words. Now, you're going to read some books that are, you know, 30,000 or 25,000. If you've read the book Empower, that's 25,000 words. My book Vintage Innovation is about 40,000 words. Same thing with Launch. But if we keep that average of about 50,000 words, then each book takes up about 250 minutes to read. And if you read for about 357 days out of a year, so you give yourself a little over a week off for those off days, you are going to land somewhere around 35 minutes a day that you need to spend reading. If you are at a faster pace, obviously you're going to be reading at about 27 or 28 minutes per day, right? So that's the big idea. Now, one approach that you could have would be to carve out 35 minutes a day for reading. It might be on your lunch break, or you might be during an activity where you're unwinding each evening. You might take 2 20-minute chunks and devote those toward reading. So you might read right before you go to bed or early in the morning. But the idea here is that you are giving yourself a longer stretch of time to really get into the flow of reading and spend more time doing that. I can tell you when I was a middle school teacher, I used to read during my prep period, and I would read for about 25 minutes during a 45-minute prep, and that was my unwinding time. And then I would read before I went to bed, and that was a large part of my reading time. When I taught self-contained, so I taught all subjects, my students would read for about 35 to 40 minutes a day silently as a whole group. And instead of walking around and monitoring them, I would just read it as well. And I figured if I got caught reading while my students were reading, I would just say, hey, I'm modeling for them what I want them to be doing. I think if they see that I am a passionate reader, then that's actually a good thing. Now, that's one approach that works, but there's a second approach that works as well. If life is really busy and you don't have 35 minutes a day to spare, a different approach is to make time for reading by converting downtime into reading time. If you take a physical book with you when you run errands and are stuck waiting, that might be one way you could do it. You could also have a book by your desk and read a few pages in those moments between video conference calls. It also helps to take advantage of multiple book formats, which can allow you to turn monotonous tasks into reading opportunities, which leads to small tweak number two. Read your books in multiple formats. You can download the Kindle app and read while you're stuck in line or while you're waiting for that friend who is perpetually late. You know who that is. Not naming any names. Rick, if you're listening, it's you. You're always late. You can also take advantage of audiobooks and use those anytime, anywhere. You might listen to a book while you're on a run or while you're walking your dog or while you're doing chores. Suddenly that time that you are vacuuming or doing dishes or making dinner, folding laundry, those become opportunities to explore new worlds and gain new insights. If you don't have an Audible account and you want to check this out, you can look at this blog post that goes with it and get an Audible account. You can sign up now and get two free audiobooks. I highly recommend that. Another option is Kindle Unlimited, where you pay a monthly fee and get unlimited access to various ebooks and audiobooks. Same thing goes with getting a Prime account. You can get a lot of free Kindle books out there. So the idea is to have multiple formats. And by taking advantage of multiple formats, we are now in a place where you can read anywhere at any time. And that's the important thing. The ease and accessibility allows us to constantly have access to devices. And yet the very devices that allow for ease and accessibility are often the ones that pull us away from reading. At any given moment, we have these pings and alerts that are competing for our attention. And by default, we hop onto a game, we mindlessly check our email, we cruise social media, and we're pulled away from reading rather than being pulled into it. And so that's why I recommend small tweak number three. Make reading your escape. There are certain steps we can do to minimize distractions on our phones. For example, we can get rid of most notifications. We can delete social media apps from our phones or maybe hide them in a folder that we place on another screen. In some cases, we can leave our phones at home and take a book with us to a specific location. But another option is actually to make reading the escape, to make reading the distraction rather than trying to avoid the distractions themselves. Here's what I mean. In other words, if you're going to grab your phone, why not put the Kindle app on the front page and make it the first thing you see? If you're tempted to hop onto social media while you're at your desk, use work mode blockers on your device or your browser to replace Facebook and Twitter, and instead keep a browser open to Google Books or Kindle Cloud Reader or Overdrive or whatever you're reading or you're using for your ebooks. So in other words, there's lots of different social media blockers that let you go into work mode on a browser. And so that's taken away, but you're replacing it with that Google Books, Cloud Reader, Kindle Cloud Reader, Overdrive, whatever. And there's actually a strong precedence for this. So if you've ever read the book, The Power of Habit, it's one of my favorite books on forming habits. It's by Charles Duhigg. It's a little bit older, but it's timeless. It's evergreen. He refers to this cycle of cue, routine, and reward. So you see the cue. You see your phone, you move into the routine, check an app, and you get a reward, that dopamine hit from seeing likes. But if you replace the cue, it becomes easier to change the routine and reward. Now you see the cue, your phone, you move to the routine, tap on the ebook app, and then you get the reward. And this time, instead of a dopamine hit, it's the excitement of seeing new ideas or the immersion into a new story in a new world. If we want reading to become a habit, though, it's also important that we have stronger instant accessibility. And it can help to create visual cues in every space where you might be tempted to grab your phone. This is a strategy that James Clear talks about in his thought-provoking book, Atomic Habits. It's this idea that you create a visual cue, and that visual cue makes it easier for you to form that habit. Here are a couple of ideas in terms of how you can go about doing this. Put books all over the place. So set a book by your nightstand and read when you go to bed. Research has demonstrated that the blue light from phones can disrupt our production of melatonin, which in turn makes it harder to go to sleep. We know that. We've seen that there's a lot of research for this. And this in turn can keep us away from hitting that REM sleep, that the REM sleep. I say REM and I instantly think about that's me in the corner, you know, in the spotlight, losing my religion, whatever. What's the frequency, Kenneth? Anyway, the idea, though, is that if we want to have strong REM sleep, we need to avoid the blue light. And that's why I recommend having something like a Kindle Paperwhite if you want to go with an ebook format. And then I would actually not have your phone at your nightstand. So if you're charging your phone, charge it further in your room so that you physically have to get out of bed to walk toward it. If you use it as an alarm, it makes it easier to get out of bed by having that alarm, by actually getting out of bed rather than hitting snooze. Leave a few books by your kitchen table. That's one of the places where people just tend to huddle and read. Set a book by your remote. Now, there's nothing wrong with watching television, but by setting a few books next to the remote, you now have a second cue offering an alternative to decompress and unwind at the end of the day. Sure, you might want to watch The Great British Bake Off. How else are you going to avoid having a soggy bottom? But you might just choose to read a novel instead. Another idea is to set your book in a backpack or a purse. A general rule of thumb might be to take a book with you wherever you might take your phone with you. You could set it in a purse, in a backpack, and maybe you can make cargo shorts cool again and put multiple books in all of your pockets, or maybe not. Maybe you should continue to avoid cargo shorts. If my wife is hearing this, she would definitely agree that cargo shorts are a no-go right now. So anyway, those are all places you can do that. I would leave a book in your car, leave a couple of books in your car so that you have something you can go to in your car when you're stuck somewhere. The idea, though, is to just have books everywhere, to make them as accessible as possible. Ultimately, though, this cue and this routine internalizes the idea that reading is a reward in itself, which leads to small tweak number 4, treat reading as a reward rather than something that needs to be rewarded. Many of us grew up with special reading competitions that offered prizes for those of us who read a certain number of books. If you read enough, you would end up with pizza, coupons, or a prize from the prize box. But a small unintended consequence of this is that many children grew up believing that reading was something that required a reward rather than being a reward in itself. The reality is, reading is rewarding when there's no reward for reading. Reading shouldn't feel like a chore. It shouldn't feel like a grueling workout that you need to do in order to reach a goal. Instead, reading should be fun. For this reason, your 50 books should all be books that you actually want to read. It helps to begin with a massive list of books, way more than 50. Ask friends, ask family for suggestions. Go online and look up reading lists. Check out lists of diverse authors so that you can gain a broader perspective and make sure that you have Black, Indigenous, people of color. Make sure that you have broader perspectives. Make sure that you're reading in different genres. consider books that are outside your immediate profession. This might not seem relevant to your professional learning in the beginning, but the reality is that innovation is often all about exposing you to different ideas rather than new and shiny ideas. In other words, the most relevant ideas might be in a different domain or profession or discipline or even a different set of time. Once you have a large set of books, start diving in and read the books you love, but discard the books you don't. Be absolutely ruthless with your approach. If a book isn't helpful, if it's not interesting, put it down. Feel free to do that. And never feel guilty for failing to finish a book. The reality is, the best readers I know are really good at quitting books early. It's not a waste of money if you buy a book and it isn't for you. After all, your money helped pay that author for their ideas and their work, and you can respect their ideas and their work without reading their books. The reality is, they're going to get paid regardless, and you helped support them, even if it just wasn't a good fit for you. In this sense, reading is more like Netflix and less like a college course. You should be able to check out multiple options, get started, and then walk away if it's a bad fit for you. You might be tempted to create a year-long plan of every book you want to read, and that might work for you if you already have a strong reading habit. But if you want to focus on habit building, you'll probably want to have multiple options and choose whatever book is most enticing at the moment. I think it also helps to give yourself the permission to read multiple books at the same time. You might have two novels, one general book, one book about education, a biography, a book about creativity. I mean, all over the place. And at one moment, you might feel like reading something light and comical, and that's fine. That's totally worth it. I mean, if that's what you're in the mood for. But then at another moment, you might want some deep thinking science fiction dystopia that makes you feel something strong. And you might be drawn toward a counterintuitive book about motivation that just piques your interest. When reading is inherently rewarding, our process will be messy and idiosyncratic. But that's okay. The messy process often leads us to make critical connections between seemingly unrelated ideas. This in turn can increase our divergent thinking and help us become more innovative. You might also use reading as a reward for other activities. This might include taking a bath and getting in the hot tub and reading a novel after a grueling day of work. Or you might give yourself 20 minutes of free reading time after doing annoying paperwork or answering emails. It might be your reward when a parent has gotten upset with you and angry, and you're using it as your way to decompress and escape. In some cases, you might even reward yourself for reading a certain number of books by buying books or checking out new books. Here, a trip to the library store or a bookstore can feel like a trip to the candy shop. And if you don't have a lot of money, one of the things that I love doing is going to Goodwill, just checking out the different books that they have there. And some Goodwills have an amazing assortment of books to choose from, and they are super duper cheap. The reality is that as rewarding as reading may be, though, there are some people who are highly motivated by that sense of accomplishment that comes from hitting the 50-book milestone. If we think about intrinsic motivation, it's the sheer enjoyment of reading. But there's something similar to intrinsic motivation if you look at the spectrum of motivation from DC and Ryan, where they actually talk about identified regulation, and that's that sense of accomplishment that you come from, that's being motivated not necessarily by having the sheer enjoyment or pleasure of reading. It's the sense of accomplishing something, and that's why I think it's really helpful, if that's what's motivating you, to treat this process as a game. Smartphone apps succeed by using elements of gameplay and gamification to get their users to spend more time on their platforms. Often they include levels with incremental success. They use visual cues that show progress toward a goal. They'll often include badges that you'll earn as you accomplish specific goals or objectives. These elements of gameplay can exist in everything from Candy Crush to Pokemon Go. But they're also present in social media, right? Friend counts, alerts, notifications, badges. On fitness apps where you get badges for reaching your step count or having multiple days in a row of staying within your calorie count or whatever it may be. Productivity apps have incorporated these ideas by including badges and progress bars and reminders, all to gamify the process of doing projects. And we can take these ideas of gameplay into our 50 book challenge. Here's a few different ideas. You can make it easy to start. Games work because they have a low barrier of entry. And I think it's helpful to make it easy by giving yourself the permission to read easy books. Check your progress each week. So have some way to monitor your progress and gamify this by having something like tally marks or badges, having three jars with marbles that you move from haven't started to started to finished. But this creates a small ritual or celebration each time you succeed. Create levels for yourself, like I mentioned, by having some big wins early. That means include some graphic novels, include some short books like Austin Kleon books. All of those are ways that you can gamify the process with having levels built into it. Create rewards for reading, right? Games work because they have these rewards built into it when you hit certain milestones. And I would make the acquisition of new books a part of your milestones that you hit. And finally, games often work because of community. If you think about the games that are thriving on Xbox and PlayStation, they have communities. And so I would recommend participating in communities, checking out things like Goodreads, and other writing and reading communities where you can join and enjoy it and check it out and be a part of that community. Ultimately, though, there is no formula for developing this book reading habit. Some people read 10 books at the same time, and some people read one. Some folks check their progress by reading a certain number of pages a day. Others read a book a week, and others aim for just saying, I'm going to hit 4 to 5 books per month. Some people schedule book vacations and binge read, while others stick to reading whenever they feel bored. Some people devote time to it every single day, and they have chunked out times that are just reading time. And other people do that when they're multitasking, right? When they're doing chores and listening, or when they're on runs, or, you know, they don't necessarily have to make time for reading every day. They just rearrange their time a little bit so that reading becomes a part of it. The key thing, though, is to find those small tweaks that work for you so that you can reach a place where you're reading multiple books that push your thinking. It's really not even about reading 50 books. It's just an arbitrary number. If you read 25 books and you normally read 2 books a year, that's a huge win. That's a giant win. Again, ultimately, it's all about what works best for you. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify or wherever it is that you get this podcast? Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.